Hey, hit me!
Are you ready for the deadliest news, issues, comments, and people? Well, on now is National Talk Black with Trundy Trev, going live from BBM through the National Indigenous Radio Service. Give us a call now, 1-800-422-416. National Talk Black with Trendy Trev.
Yes, a very good morning, you deadly mob. Welcome back to your yarning circle, the Murray Grapevine. It is National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev. Murray from the Curry. I come to you live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns on Yidinji Country. That's BBM, Bumrabip Media, 98.7 FM. And we go across the nation thanks to NERS, National Israeli Service. You can have your say by calling us on that deadly number, 1-800-422-416. I'd like to acknowledge traditional owners of the land we broadcast from, and to all our traditional owners across this beautiful country of ours, welcome back to National Talk Black. Have your saying, yarn up strong, you mob. All right, Books, Scats and Bura, that's EEL. Andy Griffith kicks off ILF, that's the Indigenous Literacy Foundation. Great book swap with First Nation kids at the museum, Australian Museum. And that happened on Tuesday. Indigenous Literacy Foundation Ambassador Andy Griffiths launched the 2025 Great Book Swap at the Australian Museum in Sydney. We're going to catch up a yarn with Zoe Chasm, ILF Head of Programs, and talk about this fantastic opportunity. Zoe, good morning. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you very much for coming to the program. Well, you're based in Sydney, aren't you?
Yeah. I'm on Darug country today.
Beautiful. Thank you very much. Look, we've been talking about the Australian children's author, Andy Griffiths. Great to have him on board as the ambassador, lifetime ambassador, and talking about the great swap, the great book swap. So tell us about the launch there, please.
Yeah, of course. So we actually had the great book swap launch at the Australian Museum on Gadigal country in Sydney on Tuesday this week.
Yes.
It's a great little fundraiser for the ILF, for us to be able to, I guess, have all different people from young ones to educators and elders and just swapping books and yarning about the connection that you can have with stories and raising money for our foundation to be able to continue to run our programs in remote communities around Australia.
Well, when you look at it, sister, we are storytellers, you know, and then we're talking about book, which is the vehicles as such, you know. But it's good networking, good stories, and look, a platform for inspiration for our young ones and for their vision for the future, yes?
Absolutely. And I mean, for ILF, that's exactly why we exist, is the books that we publish and that we share both across Australia and internationally is... It is those stories that our communities want to write. And we've got some new books that are written by the young ones and drawn by the young ones and elders and in language. And I think as our tradition is storytelling, or one of our traditions is storytelling, it's a really powerful vehicle for connecting and seeing each other through our storylines and through our interests and... Yeah, it's pretty damn special in bringing different ages together and different families and peoples together too.
And talking about the Australian children's author, Andy Griffith, having him on board as an ambassador. Look, that's a fantastic achievement in itself, and having someone of that calibre at the table. Lifetime ambassador.
He's a legend, and he's hilarious, and the kids love him. he's an absolute crack-up, and he's so passionate about that kind of joy of creativity, so not just storytelling, but at the launch he brought a doll and a dinosaur, and he got these kids who had never met him in person before to basically come up with a story. And I'm telling you, like, Godzilla ate the baby ate Godzilla, like it was all over the place. It was fantastic to have that on the day as well.
And there's their thought process and their vision coming to life, so to speak, you know, and adding to it. Well, the storytellers, aren't they, you know, in more ways than one. And look, it is fantastic. it is great to see. And talk about raising funds Do we have any dollars that were raised, and how can people donate if that's the case?
We are looking to raise $300,000 in this year's Great Book Swap. Okay. So that's the equivalent of 30,000 books in the hands of our young ones in remote communities. ILF, we are completely not-for-profit, so we are solely dependent on people's generosity in order to be able to continue to run. And that's not just delivering books into communities, it's running our book workshops, it's publishing our books on behalf of our communities, where the communities don't have to pay a cent.
Sure.
And that is so that we can make that equity of access for our resources. So raising $300,000, it may seem big, but I think the ripple effect of having those books, the culturally safe and relevant books in the hands of our people, is so much more important. And anyone can sign up. You go to ILF.org.au. You look for the Great Book Swap. You can sign up. You can raise money. You can donate directly to ILF so you don't have to bring in books and things. Sharing the work that we do. When you can't donate money, because we know cost of living is expensive.
Yes.
But sharing the work that we do through our socials and all that kind of stuff helps other people see us.
Yeah, fantastic. Really just getting the word out, that's another opportunity, you know, and if you can donate some coin, fantastic. And it's all a team effort, but it is a an investment, you would think, and supporting
Absolutely.
Our kids, our young ones, in regard, it takes a village to raise a child. Here we are, let's Hell get yeah. it together, people, you know.
Yeah, well, we're at the moment, we're in 495 remote Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander communities, but we know there are so many more communities that we can reach and so many families and homes that we can can work with. We just need the ability to do so. So sharing the word, raising money for us, all of that helps.
All that helps. Zoe, great talking with you. Thank you so very much. Big shout out to your team. Keep doing what you're doing, educating our young ones. Look, it's a good yarn. Great to have the Australian children's author on board as well, Andy Griffiths. Nice yarn with you. You take care, sis, and we'll yarn soon.
Yeah, absolutely. Take care, Trevor.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Deadly yarn. Beautiful yarn. That's Zoe Chasm, and I'm ILF, that's the Indigenous Literacy Foundation, head of programs, and talking about the Great Book Swap. So there it is, an Australian children's author, Andy Griffiths, at the table as a lifetime ambassador, and they're looking at raising $300,000 to gift 30,000 culturally relevant books to remote First Nations communities across Australia. So if you go to the ILF webpage, ILF, Indigenous Literacy Foundation, Google it, talk to Auntie Google, and see what you can do. Donate, dollar coin, what have you. Every cent helps. So thank you so very much. This is your daily program, National Talk Black. Add to the conversation here on your daily program, National Talk Black, 1-800-422-416.
If you love me, if you love me, let me know. If you love me, let me know. But I ain't really know, so if you love me, let me know. If you love me, let me know. Calling my phone, calling my phone.
Yo.
FaceTime, he wanna see my pretty face. What do he wanna know?
He wanna know.
Yeah. Well, my attention wanna keep me to himself. I told him keep it on the low.
Keep it on the low, low.
So good, I got him obsessed. Now he's stalking on my post.
Stalking on my post.
Spending money, take me shopping, he be doing the most.
But I can never trust a soul.
Baby, I'm by my business.
I ain't playing games.
Really, I hate chasing these millions.
With no makeup,
still the baddest. Dip in the building.
He know I'm the realest.
I think he catching feelings.
But I gotta do me, 'cause when I didn't have it, where was everybody? Now I'm up, they wanna message me and say I'm sorry. They know I'm great, they told me don't forget me when you make it. I tell them where was your support when I came out from the pavement.
If you love me, let me know. 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 'Cause you got me in the zone. But I ain't really know. So if you love me, let me know. 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 Calling my phone, calling my phone.
Yo.
FaceTime, he wanna see my pretty face. What do he wanna know?
He wanna know.
Yeah. Well, my attention wanna keep me to himself. I told him keep it on the low.
Keep it on the low, low.
So good, I got him obsessed. Now he's stalking on my post.
Stalking on my post.
Spending money, take me shopping, he be doing the most.
Can you hold me slowly? Nobody know me like you know me. Hold me slowly. Nobody know me.
My name's Jared Harbrow from the Gold Coast Suns. You're tuned in to National Talk Black with Trendy Trev.
1-800-422-416.
That's good times there, Moses Warrison and friends. This is your daily program, National Talk Black. Have your saying yarn up strong. Deadly number here, 1-800-422-416, number you need to call. Yarn with yours truly, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev Murray from the Curry. Come to you live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns on Yidinji Country. BBM Bumrabib Media, 98.7 FM. And we go across the nation thanks to NERS, National Radio Service. Have your saying yarn up strong. You can also text a brother, 045-714-0550. And don't forget our Facebook page as well, BBM 987 FM. All right, as International Women's Day approaches, new insights reveal that women are not only the backbone of Australia's disability sector, making up 70% of the workforce, but are also often juggling unpaid caregiving roles at home. The weight of care is disproportionately falling on women, yet their contribution remains undervalued and under-supported. With that, we're going to catch up a yarn now with Juliet Middleton, a CEO of Live Big. And we have Juliet on the line. Juliet, good morning. How are you?
Hi, I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you very much for coming to the program. Where are you based, Juliet?
Today I'm in Sydney, actually.
Sydney. All right. Thank you. Look, hats off to all our beautiful women out there, International Women's Day, as it approaches. But looking after, we're talking about women carrying the weight, carrying the weight of disability care, it's time to recognise their contribution. Look, in more ways than one, we wouldn't be if it wasn't for beautiful women.
Absolutely. Mm. Look, women increasingly, and this trend has been changing over time, are the backbone of lots of sectors, as well as in parts of society in Australia, particularly in the disability sector in which I work and Live Big, whom I work for, are part of, where we women make up at least 70% of the workforce.
So if you look at it, women in disability sector is unmatched, you know, compared to male counterparts, you know?
Look, almost, and we know that other sectors, particularly in healthcare and social services, the social sectors are heavily female, dominated, or woman dominated as well. And some interesting research and increasing sort of awareness around the role these women play as both caregivers, caregiving responsibility at work, but also at home.
Yes. And they operate with that care. I mean, like the disability sector, most women are drawn to this field from personal experience as well, you would think.
That's what we see. That's absolutely right. And that what we're becoming increasingly aware of is how so many juggle the caregiving at home, balancing professional and other personal responsibilities, the energy that they give to the empathy and the resilience requirements is, you know, we're trying to understand that more.
And the natural, the maternal instinct, it comes naturally for a woman, so they just do what needs to be done, but they travel, they operate from the heart as well, don't they, and emotions?
Yes, they do. I'm always really careful about this because you know, we're not the only gender do that.
Yes. I'll be talking big numbers here, 70%.
Well, that's right. So there are parts of our world, parts of society, sector, whatever that is, whereby they are doing it more, they are giving to professions which have a heavier requirement or more stressful with respect to the care that the people need to provide. And it's that dual or more than one or two roles. A woman who's working in the care sector may then be going home and caring for partner or children, then may have parents that they're caring for, may be involved in community work with schools, daycares, whatever that may be. And it's all requiring them to draw on that maternal caring instinct.
So it's time to recognise their contribution. So we're talking about, everybody at the table, whether it be government, whether it be organisations, whether it be male counterparts, you know, we all need to recognise and what can we do in regarding contribution to our beautiful women?
I always say, because what can we do? That's... You ask different people, you will get some similar but also different responses.
Yes.
One of the things, this is what we are trying to do through these conversations, is raise the awareness. Now, that's the first part before we even get to, what are we practically going to do? You're 90% of the way there if people have, if you've generated an awareness of what is happening. And
exactly.
So when people encounter even their own partners or family, or they encounter other women who are in caring roles, that they're aware of that.
Yes,
I think that goes a long way towards building that understanding in people, as both individuals and society, saying actually how can we ensure we're supporting these women the best way possible.
Exactly, and no matter how small that is, would it be just a statement acknowledging the work that they're doing, or a cup of coffee, or
That's right.
15-minute break, whatever. You just go and go and have some time to yourself, and I got this for the next 30 minutes. Something to that effect.
In the workplace and at LiveBig, where I work, talking to our teams, talking to our people.
Yes.
It is very common. It was as recent as a few days ago that two of the women said to me, the thing we value the most is the flexibility to work, to deliver our work and the expectations around the other caring responsibilities that we have. And that, that's immediately something that workplaces can do. And look, of course, I understand it's not for every workplace, but for workplaces where you can give that flexibility, you can't put a price on that.
Well, like I said, that's... time is money if you look at it that way, you know. If you give me time to have to myself, that's like a payment, isn't it? So to speak, I mean, you can always make money, but you never buy back time.
Yeah, so you have to look after yourself before you can look after others.
Yes.
And we know that burnout and mental health challenges, like anxiety and depression, one of the things that contributes to that is that not having any time to recharge your own battery.
So the care, of course, like you mentioned, looking after yourself as well. I mean, like, it's a lot of pressure on a carer in all facets, you know what I mean? And it can affect you, if not physically, then mentally, emotionally, spiritually, all the above.
Yes, yep, that's absolutely. And if you eventually run out of energy to give, and it's where those flexible work arrangements, tailoring career development opportunities for women who you know have dual caring roles, even additional leave for carers, those things can make a real difference.
Is there support from government or organisations like NDIS who are supporting carers as such, not only the patients?
Look, that's a big question, isn't it? Government and NDIS supporting carers, I think. Absolutely. The will and want and recognition and the need to do that is there. But practically, how do they do that? That's a really big question. And I think, you know, we've seen a lot of conversations, particularly coming up to International Women's Day this year, around things like, you know, paid and supported childcare. So I think there has been some big advancements, but I also think that we've got further to go with that.
Exactly. Another gap we need to close.
Yeah, so many gaps, isn't
there? Exactly, Juliet. Look, thank you for your yarn, and big shout out to all the beautiful women out there, International Women's Day, but also to the carers out there, and especially the weight of disability care. Thank you for your yarn. You take care, and we'll yarn soon, Juliet.
Thanks. We look forward to it.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
A deadly yarn there. Juliet Middleton, her name is, CEO of Live Big, and women carry the weight of disability care. It's time to recognise their contribution. Hats off to you, beautiful women, and look, thank you very much. And whatever you can do to support our sisters out there with the work that they do, like I said, if you give them a cup of coffee or give them a break or just acknowledge, having nice words to the work that they're doing. People don't care what you know till they know that you care. Take that with you. This is your daily program, National Talk Black. Have your saying yarn up strong, 1-800-422-416.
You're speaking, but I never hear what you say. Can you replay?
I'm in my feelings. Am I miscommunicating? I hate this.
Let's talk about love. Let's talk about life. Talk about change. Translating.
about life, let's talk about change, let's talk about us. Let's talk about fights, let's talk about things that nobody does. Let's talk about love.
Let's talk about.
Yeah, that daily track there, Talk, that's Budgerie featuring May A. And that's what we do on this program, Talk, you mob. Have your saying, yarn up strong, 1-800-422-416. Call that number, yarn up yours truly, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev Murray from the Curry. I'm your host for your daily program, National Talk Black. So do add to the conversation, and we're going to catch and have a yarn now. We've got Michael on the line. Michael, good morning. How are you?
Yeah, David,
brother. Oh, Michael, Angela Newey. How are you, my brother? Good to hear your voice. How are you travelling?
Yeah, all good.
Good. Let the mob know. Who your mob? Where you from, Bala?
Yeah, well, universal, really.
Wow.
Yeah, Polynesia, Melanesia.
Connection everywhere, Australia. Brother. Yes, connection everywhere. Fruit salad. Yeah. What you want
Southern
to yarn about, Bala?
Southern Hemisphere, Murray.
Yes, I love it. What you want to yarn about?
Yeah, no, talk about every time I look at them. Sugarcane paddock make me wild, you know, slavery, shit. Sorry. Slavery, you know, slavery. When's the compensation coming from the government, you know?
Back in the day when our mob was working on sugarcane farms for pittance. Well, slavery, that's right, exactly. Paid pittance.
Yes. Slaves, you know, our ancestors built all that, you know, the length and breadth of the coast, you know?
Exactly. And Canucks there from the South Pacific Islands, Canuckers.
Yeah,
exactly.
You know, and locals, you know, traditional owners of cut cane too, slavery there too.
Yep.
You know, run them off the land, all that kind of thing. Only for sugar. Now sugar killing everybody across the world.
Yeah,
diabetes,
true.
Yeah.
True, exactly. Diabetes.
Yeah.
Exactly, the world we live in.
They got slaves from all over the world.
Mm.
Like from Africa, from Pacific, from India, from everywhere.
And we're talking indigenous across the globe.
Yeah, indigenous across the globe. So who's going to pay up? Donald Trump not paying up.
Donald Trump not, no. Well, he wants to get rid of indigenous people off their lands and build a nice resort country, so to speak, holiday country.
When is the, you know, like, compensation job, you know, like, for the genocide in this country? That's why they don't want the Truth Commission to go ahead in Queensland because of...
Truth-telling.
Yeah, you can book them up for genocide. It's all about genocide, you know, like... And, I'd rather get rid of... The traditional owners get the land, all the land back, you know, get rid of all the sugarcane and plant food.
Sure.
You know, every year we're going to have flood, and then they're going to depend on food coming from down south. You know, why can't we, on those same lands, we could be growing all kind of kai, you know?
Well, Michael, you look, Bala, we're the healthiest race living on planet Earth. Were we not?
Aye?
We were the healthiest race living on planet Earth.
Yeah, we're the first cultivators of the Earth. First people of my garden are Melanesian people. And here in Australia, the biggest garden in the world.
Yes, yes.
They grow food all over the place. You know, rice comes from...
There was no sugar and no alcohol?
Yeah, the origin of rice comes from Cape York, swamps of Cape York. Some man walked out of Australia and threw rice all over Asia and Africa.
Yep.
Yeah. It wasn't coming from Africa or Asia. The rice went from Cape York. That's the genesis of rice.
It's funny. I had a call. I had a call the other day from Brother Merv, Indigenous man from WA, and they're talking about a conference over there, and talking about stolen wages and money getting paid back to them, but it was pittance, and a lot of our ancestors have passed on, who didn't receive any funds. You know, but it should go to the families, should it not?
Yeah. Well, look at that. What's the name? Purling days and Trokers days. told them good old slavery days, you know?
Mm.
You know, no one been compensated. You know, after the war, they stole the money off the diggers.
Mm-hmm.
Black diggers took their money. Like for day on in the Strait, they, you know, they took money off the diggers and they built a hospital at Wyburn and Appleton, and paid a doctor to come from England to fix the TB outbreak after the war.
Yep.
Yeah, but same time, even if we fix that problem, dugong oil fixed that. Dugong oil fixed the TB epidemic in the Straits.
Mm. But you look at today.
Dugong oil was the one they slaughtered. Dugong all around the East Coast to make money.
Yes. But if you look at today, if you're getting paid by a company or organization and your payment is not the ward wage, so to speak, 3-6 months later, they've got to pay back what's owing to you and then the interest on top of that.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, them
same rules apply. You would think. Yes.
It was all pounds them days.
Well, exactly.
But they haven't properly paid back. Like, they got to pay. Who's going to pay for the intellectual property rights of the boomerang, the trimerang, and the catamaran?
Yep.
Who's going to pay? We should be taking them to the world court.
Royalties.
Yeah, royalty for all that. They reckon that's their design now.
Yes.
Hang on, all that dagger board and all that underneath, that's that aerodynamic from the boomerang.
Exactly.
Underneath all them boats now.
Well, we were professors in all fields, all industries back in the day.
Yeah, but all the planes flying around, that's boomerang.
Thank you, that's boomerang. That's
aerodynamic from the boomerang. So I've asked different lawyers to take us to court.
Yes.
No one wants to step up.
Well, you're tweaking the conversation, which is great, so thank you very much. I've got to move on, my brother. Please keep in touch, and we'll yarn soon. Big S-O. There is Michelangelo Newey, based up Torres Straits, but does a lot of work down this way as well. And, look, I played football with the brother back in the day, and unfortunately with a football accident. Became a quadriplegic because of the game of rugby league. So there it is, and he's still bats, activist, strong for our people, and good to be yarn with him. This is your daily program, National Talk Black. Have your say in yarn up strong, 1-800-422-416. We've got Which Way Yarning segment coming up very soon with Edmonton Police, so stay tuned for that, and call that number, 1-800-422-416.
G'day, you mob. This is Tanya Kernaghan with Trendy Trev, and you're tuned in to National Talk Black.
Call us now, 1-800-422-416.
Thank you.
Yeah, my kind of life, Yothi Yindi, how's your kind of life living? Live your life to the fullest, and if things are not going your way, change, you're not a tree. So live with it, have a plan of attack for your future and do what you need to do. And the old saying, if you're not happy where you are, yeah, change, you're not a tree. And see people in a job or don't like the job, and 40 years later, they're still in the job, you know, like dog laying on the nail. There it is, daily track there, Yothi Yindi, My Kind of Life. Now we're going to go into the next segment, Which Way Yarning, proudly sponsored by Perry's, that's IGA at Edmonton and Brinsmead, and give us a box of food here at Bummer Bipper Media, Healthy Living, Healthy Lifestyle. And big shout out to those guys. Thank you very much, sponsor for this program. Edmonton Police, we've got Senior Sergeant Glenn Delay and his bodyguard there. We've got Stephen Grant, liaison officer. Good morning, gentlemen. How are we?
Yeah, good morning, Trevor.
Right, fantastic. Steve, who are your mob? Where are you from?
Yes, the footprints of the Tully Mission Cardboard area.
Yes.
Pretty wet place.
Yes.
You've been down there.
Been down there, thank you. Got family down there. Big shout out to Lama and Sister Tyne.
Mm-hmm.
Senior Sergeant Glenn Delay, hillbilly man up on the Tablelands, and commute down here.
Yes, absolutely. Yep.
At Edmonton Police, you head up there.
Yep, each day.
Fantastic. Now, he mentioned footprint. And our yarn today is fingerprints.
Fingerprints.
There you go. Footprint, fingerprint.
Yes.
So, look, there it is. A fingerprint is identification to individual.
Yep.
It to is. Who you are.
Absolutely. So it's a tool that we will use to identify people.
Yes.
We might start off with a history lesson. What do you
please,
think?
Yeah. Please, okay. Shed some light.
Okay. So James Henry Craig was the first criminal to be identified by his fingerprints in Queensland.
Whoa.
So in January 1905. Mr. Craig.
He was the first culprit.
He was the first one. Yep. So Mr. Craig and an accomplice blew a safe up and made off with £9 and 4 bottles of whiskey.
£9?
Yep. So that was a store at Kangaroo Point. And a few days later, they've blown Kangaroo another Point. Safe up at Nunda Railway Station.
Yes.
Now, a fingerprint was found on a beer bottle at the scene of the first crime.
Mm.
And the fingerprint evidence, along with tools and revolvers, were found by police.
Yep.
And that all backed the case up against James Craig and his accomplice.
Okay.
So both were found guilty of safe-breaking offences. They got 5 years for the shop burglary and 10 years for the railway station crime. So tough years.
So when we talk, that's here in Queensland, fingerprint, and there his name is, James Henry Craig, so now famous, you know. Is that fingerprints across the globe?
Yes.
First ever, or is the first one in Queensland?
That's the first one in Queensland.
In Queensland,
I'm quite sure that... technology or movements towards using that as a identifying particulars was happening across the globe at the time.
Sure.
Poor old Mr. James Craig was the first.
So
one
before in 1905 in Queensland, that way of finding out who the criminal is.
Yeah.
We weren't using fingerprints before then. No,
absolutely not.
That's right.
Yeah, probably.
Well, now we have 2025 DNA.
Yes, correct. Yep. So we've got other means now of linking people towards a crime.
So in the 21st century, Senior Sergeant Glenn Delay, do you still do fingerprints?
We do. Okay. Yes. Yep. Okay. Now, if people have had their fingerprints taken, let's say over the past years, they would have noticed a difference between what we would have done, let's go back 10 or 15 years ago, to how we take our fingerprints now. So there's two types we can take. We can take wet prints, and we also do live scan. So wet prints is the old ink
on a piece of paper.
Yep, not the most pleasurable experience for your offender, because at the end of the experience, they've got a hand and palms and fingers full of black ink.
Yep,
they've got to wash off and
look. I'm hanging on every word. Pardon, and yeah, like. I'm naive to it.
Yeah.
And that's a good statement, you could say.
Yeah.
Because I've never, ever been in the police station to do that. So, you know.
So look, now we have this live scan, and it's basically like a photocopier. So, we, we scan your prints through a device there. That's been happening since...
And that goes online.
Correct.
And so, if you're living in Cairns here, but you're holidaying down in Brisbane, and something went down, and your fingerprints is found...
Yeah.
It goes. It's in the system.
Absolutely. So look, if they don't have anything on the system, And they've been printed for
it
the first time.
It stays there for it's, that report?
It'll stay there, and they'll get an identification number associated with that.
With that, with
that print and with their name. Print.
Yeah, okay, thank you. Okay. So 10, 20 years down the track, there it is.
That's right. So so previously recorded offenders, when their prints are taken, first of all, they're validated by fingerprint personnel at the Fingerprint Bureau to confirm that that's the same prints that is on file. And then... anyone, of course, that didn't have anything on file would be allocated that ID number. The results, identity results, are returned within 5 minutes of us scanning them.
Yes.
Then, if there is prints matched against a crime, results of that comes back within about a 30-minute time back to the officers that have taken the prints to let you know that them prints are actually found with a crime that's unsolved at this stage. So,
yeah.
Look, yeah, that's right. These fingerprints stay on the database forever. And because of the uniqueness of people's prints, that's what helps us identify who. Now, just because your fingerprints have been found at a crime scene doesn't mean you've committed the
crime. Thank you.
That's an important part.
It's part of the investigation. Absolutely. So we know who was in the room at the time or whatever case may be. Or who's been in that room. Yeah. And don't have to be. It doesn't say that what time you was in that room,
that's
but the
right.
fact that your fingerprints, you were in that room.
That's right. Yeah. And look, a good example of that is a stolen vehicle. You know, someone's prints may be found on the outside of that vehicle. And, although they may be listed as a suspect, that vehicle may be parked at a shopping centre at some stage and they've touched the car as they walk past.
Yeah.
You know.
I tripped over my trolley and caught the car for catch my balance.
Yep. And look, we know this because all police are fingerprinted prior to joining this service. So they have all their fingerprints on file.
Oh, the police officers?
Of course. And the reason for that is when we go to a crime scene, if there's fingerprints on that crime scene...
Okay,
sometimes they are the actual police that were investigating the crime scene.
Yeah, gotcha.
Yep.
Yeah,
so we can discount those fingerprints
straight away.
To say
okay.
that they actually belong to police officers that have been involved with the investigation.
Over to you, Steve. As a PLO, do you guys work in that space?
No, not
no,
really.
You don't.
No.
But let me ask you a question. Do PLOs, can you arrest people?
No.
Okay.
We can assist.
Assist
the officer if he's given me a directive to do something.
Sure, Rodio.
Like a prime example of
Glendale. But he would take the culprit into this the station to do the fingerprints.
Correct.
That's a police officer's job.
Yeah, but I could assist Glenn.
Okay, Rodio. Yeah, sure.
Like if someone's a little bit apprehensive about the procedures, we can always lean on a PLO to come and just make them feel a bit more comfortable.
Sure, if we're talking about an indigenous person. Yeah.
And the other thing about this fingerprints, Trevor, is we've only got one print.
Yeah, the individual. Yep,
everyone's
that's right.
Different.
It's owned to you.
Correct.
Yeah, that's right.
And I believe the, don't get me wrong, but I'm pretty sure the prints actually go to Canberra.
There is a national database as well. So if we believe that someone's been interstate, we can check that national database also. So, look, they're handy because crimes, some people may not be found to have committed a crime that will allow us to take their prints for many, many years. And they could have committed a crime 30 years ago, and that crime is still unsolved and those prints are still on file.
Well, it becomes a so-called paper trail, doesn't it?
Absolutely. So, you know? So there's and look, it does happen frequently where we've printed someone and it's gone off to the Fingerprint Bureau. And all of a sudden we found that that is a link between that person and a crime that's happened many, many years ago. And again, that's not a determination of guilt. That's just a tool that we know that that person was present at a crime scene.
Well, with respect to loved ones who've lost loved ones through murder or crime or what have you, to me, 2025, you can't get away with murder. When you're talking about DNA, you're talking about fingerprints. And technology and what have you.
Yeah, so that's exactly right. Fingerprints are only one tool that we've got to link people to offences. There's a number of other things. It may be DNA, statements, witnesses.
We all watch the cop shows and what have you, you know.
Yeah.
They look at the footprint, the Nike shoes you were wearing.
Yeah.
Yeah, they even do teeth marks, you know what I mean?
Exactly.
So there's... Everything signs off to you, the individual.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's your print. There's your ID.
Absolutely.
In more ways than one.
Yeah.
Identification.
And that puts you there, you know. But look, devices like their Life Scan now certainly a lot more comfortable than the old ink wet prints. You know, when we put those down. They take a little bit of time.
Sure.
A little bit of a trickery to folding the paper so we don't smudge prints over other prints. And
Yes.
And, of course, then we've got the time factor as well where we take the prints. They get approved by a supervisor. Then we post them down to the Fingerprint Bureau. There's a lot of time involved in that. We're with the OLive scan now that they're actually scanned immediately.
So everybody who gets arrested has fingerprints system. They go through the system.
They need to have committed an offence that would result in a one-year imprisonment term. So there's certain offences that we can actually take your prints.
Oh, so drink driving or something like that, whatever. Not a chance.
And it's also important to remember when we take those prints, if you're found not guilty of a crime, of course, then we don't have the authority to keep those prints, so they get deleted off the system.
Oh, do they really? That's okay. Correct.
Yep. So
because your fingerprints would have the paper trail would have showed that... 3 years ago, there was an incident and your fingerprints were there.
Already you would have been spoken to about that.
But if there's all clean, only because of the situation that you're in at the moment,
yes,
it then gets destroyed.
We would destroy it because you've been found not guilty of the offence.
Sure, exactly. So you're free to go and you're not someone looking out for.
Yeah.
Mm. Well, I was thinking that, because here we are talking about fingerprints and we are in 2025, I thought that we wouldn't be using fingerprints no more, but... They're still a powerful tool.
Still
aren't
very
they?
Powerful tool, absolutely. Mm. Because they're unique to each person. So
yes.
Yep. Okay. And our fingerprint experts, look, they read people's fingerprints like a map. There's certain characteristics to your fingerprints.
Sure. Yeah, yeah.
Don't ask me anything about it. I'm no expert on fingerprints at all.
Okay.
Other than I own a set.
And you roll the culprit's finger on the ink. That's all you know.
Exactly. Yep. So, but they actually very. Very experienced in identifying particulars with a fingerprint that are unique and then matching them up to certain individuals.
Well, the same thing applies for a weapon. When a gun is shot off, the bullets...
That's right.
Exactly. Bullet matches the...
The rifling in the bullet will match to that weapon. Exactly. They're unique also, so...
Sure.
Yep.
There's another. But still, then we're talking about fingerprints back onto the gun, if that's the case, too. You
correct.
Know?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
We know which gun, but don't know who shot the gun. Yep. Here's the bullet that matches the gun.
That's so right. Yep. Yeah. So it's just a tool that we'll use, and there'll be a mountain of evidence, hopefully, that point towards the crime, and that is the suspect is the person that committed the crime.
And when individuals are using gloves, not giving any ideas out there for the criminals, if they're using gloves, then they're safe in regarding fingerprints.
Well, look, they're less likely to leave. Fingerprint with a glove, but then we'll go to DNA. Which is probably even more conclusive than your fingerprints.
If you turn the glove inside out, can you get the fingerprints?
No.
Okay.
There's certain surfaces that will produce this fingerprint. So our first one identified James Cragg on the outside of a beer bottle. That's a perfect surface to get a fingerprint off.
There you go.
Okay, but rough surfaces, CSI has let a few people down. Like we can't get fingerprints off a rock.
Yep.
There's
not yet anyway.
Not yet.
21st century.
Exactly.
All the tools.
But there are specific
good
ones.
Good yarning with you both. Thank you for the yarn.
Cheers.
My brother, good to see you.
Likewise.
Take care. All the best. And I believe there's a cyclone down south.
Yep.
And,
big shout out to the mob there at
down south as well, you know.
Good on
you. Okay, mate. Headquarters, all the best.
Know how North Queenslanders feel. Thank you very much. Take care.
Thanks.
Bye-bye. Beautiful yarn with the boys in blue, Edmonton Police, which are yarning. Fantastic program. Stay tuned. Got the news coming up via NRIS. And big shout to the team. Thank you for your company. Stay black, stay deadly, stay strong.